This from Thich Nhat Hanh is called Clouds in Each Paper. If you are a poet, you will see clearly that there is a cloud floating in the sheet of paper. Without a cloud, there will be no rain. Without rain, the trees cannot grow. And without trees, we cannot make paper. The cloud is essential for the paper to exist. If the cloud is not here, the sheet of paper cannot be here either. So we can say that the cloud and the paper inter are. Inter being is a word that is not in the dictionary yet, but if we combine the prefix inter with the verb to be, we have a new verb, inter be. Without a cloud, we cannot have paper, so we can say that the cloud and the sheet of paper inter are. If we look into this sheet of paper even more deeply, we can see the sunshine in it. If the sunshine is not there, the forest cannot grow. In fact, nothing can grow. Even we cannot grow without sunshine. And so we know that the sunshine is also in this sheet of paper. The paper and the sunshine inter are. And if we continue to look, we can see the logger who cut the tree and brought it to the mill to be transformed into paper. And we see the wheat. We know that the logger cannot exist without his daily bread, and therefore the wheat that became his bread is also in the sheet of paper. And the logger's father and mother are in it too. When we look in this way, we see that without all of these things, this sheet of paper cannot exist. So thank you for all of you for joining us this morning. So we've had three talks this month on returning to the source. Talks which have helped us to understand form and emptiness, emptiness and form. A big thank you to both Jerry and Lyndall for their teachings. And Lauren will be here next week for the last talk in this month. They've helped us, remind us where we've been and how we've arrived here. So going back, picture 7 had the ox herder, that's us, in our huts by ourselves reflecting. Picture 8, the Enzo had us trying to understand emptiness and the process of emptying. And now here we are in picture 9, return to the origin, back to the source. Throughout the series, the whole year, and throughout our practice, we've been learning a lot. We've studied the various teachings and we've gone through various different stages reflected in this whole Zen ox herding pictures. Our pointed out a couple months ago that there seems to be, three main stages in this path of search, struggle, and letting go. So here we are at the final stage. And like my colleagues before me, I'm returning again to what Martine Batchelor says in her commentary on this picture. She says the practice doesn't stop at emptiness. She says if we attach ourselves to emptiness, it could lead to isolation and separation. So we go one stage further and we re-enter the world where having forgotten ourselves, we are enlightened by all things. We realize the interdependence which is at the root of all life. This is the last picture before we enter the marketplace next month. And I've been thinking a lot about what we need before we re-enter the marketplace, before we fully integrate our practice with our daily life and with the lives of others. So I think there's this really important understanding that we need to focus on before we enter the marketplace in picture 10, and that is the teaching about interconnectedness, interdependence, which is why I love that piece that I read from Thich Nhat Hanh. When I was recently on retreat at Cloud Mountain, a friend who was there who shared that picture with me, she told me how that teaching arose one morning for her as she was eating her oatmeal. She included the farmer who grew the oats, the truck driver who shipped the oats, the workers who packaged them, all the people responsible for raisins and dried cranberries, the cows and dairy farmers who brought the milk, the others who made it possible for us to have almond milk and oatmeal. She included those who made the bowl that the oatmeal was sitting in and those who made the spoons. Just a small activity like eating oatmeal ended up with my friend feeling a deep connection with a lot of people and a lot of beings, not just humans, none of whom she actually knew. Some of you may have participated at different times with Clear Mountain Monastery. On Saturday mornings, they have a sit that is in the auditorium near St. Mark's, but you can also do it online. And I went there yesterday. They always start their sits with a chant. And yesterday, we chanted something called the 10 Subjects for Frequent Recollection. And in that was the phrase, "My very life is sustained through the gifts of others." And that rings so true for me. In fact, as I think about my life and all of that I have gained, all of this is because of the influence and generosity of others. Some are people I've known, and many others are strangers who've made things possible for me. Another way to explore this deep connectedness is to observe it in our bodies, the first foundation of mindfulness. I listened to a talk by Jill Shepherd from New Zealand yesterday, and she quotes the scholar Anilayo to highlight how dependent we are on our bodies and the four elements of earth, water, fire, and air. It was kind of a different way of understanding our relationship with these elements. Anilayo says, "Without earth and the food it provides, we would be dead within weeks. Without water, we would be dead within days. Without warmth from fire, we would be dead within hours. And without oxygen, we would be dead within minutes." This is true for every living being. We are part of this life and its very elements, and dependent upon them for our very existence. For many of us, we discover and rediscover our interconnections through being in nature. We observe the clear interdependence in nature, how all the pollinators make it possible for the plants that provide us with the food we grow, how light and warmth and water make it possible for the plants and animals to thrive, those elements we depend upon for our nourishment. And while we may not be able to see this evidence, we can learn from others how parts of nature communicate with and support each other. I've recently read quite a bit about trees, and you may have also read about this, about how with aspens, there is no such thing as a lone aspen. Each tree forms part of an enormous root system. The aspen is the largest living organism in the world. One stand of aspens in Utah, called Pando, spans 106 acres and weighs 6 million kilograms. Redwoods, similarly, redwoods can grow to 275 feet tall, but their roots are really shallow. They're only 5 or 6 feet deep. So they grow in thick groves because their shallow roots are intertwined over time and they fuse together. They start out as individuals and then they become one with others as they mature and grow. And of course, we learned a lot about how connected we are when the coronavirus spread all over the world within a very short period. I remember one non-residential weekend with Norman Fisher back when we had our home in Soto, and he reminded us that we all were breathing the same air. It really changed the sit for a lot of us when we realized how connected we were. And we discover and understand this interconnection in our just our ordinary daily lives. Several of us have shared over these months different descriptions of the pictures and commentaries, and this comes from the Columbia University one. They say, in the ordinary events of life are found the most profound truths. Only by seeking the ox as a separate ultimate reality could the ox herder discover that there is no separate reality, that the ultimate is to be found in the ordinary. It's kind of what that means, return to the origin, back to the source. So in picture 7, when the ox herder returned to her hut, she was reflecting on what she learned. Most of us, or many of us who are fortunate to go on retreat, we know how powerful that experience can be. But then we come back home to all the responsibilities, of life, of work, family, relationships, all the pleasant and unpleasant experiences that we have every day. The insights aren't, just limited to retreat experiences or being off in our huts, removing ourselves. Every day there's an opportunity to experience the truth of the teachings. Every day we see and feel the changes in our bodies. Aging teaches us directly about impermanence. While the specific changes in each of us may be different and unique, the fact that there are changes is really apparent. Every day you might wake up with a certain mood or mental state. And when you pay attention, you watch as that mood changes, So maybe you got up one morning kind of grumpy or tense, but then you went outside for your morning cup, and sitting outside in your garden, you started listening to the birds and checking out the plants. And then you noticed a change from grumpy to maybe grateful or engaged. Every day we have the opportunity to watch and experience moments of self-centeredness, and also moments where the self was diminished, where we were just present with others, open to them and listening to them and not bringing a whole lot of me into the interaction. So it's in the, just our ordinary lives that we have these opportunities to really see how similar we humans are. When we reflect on greed, hatred, and delusion, the three poisons, and how they manifest in our own lives, perhaps we can bring greater understanding to how those poisons manifest in others. That can be really hard, but it's something that I think a lot of us have practiced with. So one of our Sangha members is an author of a fabulous series of mysteries set in the Middle Ages. I went to a talk she gave recently on the release of her newest book. And in her comments, it was a Q&A kind of thing, she shared that the good qualities of her characters are something that she really aspires to. And when it was time to ask questions, I asked her, well, how do you relate to the villains in your books? And she answered that she sees the shadow side, and it's the same shadow side she has inside of her. So are we humans really so different from each other? These are kinds of questions that I think are important as we consider kind of re-entering the marketplace with the integration of our practice. We have all these opinions and judgments about others, who's good, who's not. These are horribly divisive times. And there's such an encouragement to separate ourselves from those who are different. Exploring what are real differences and what are common ones is really worth the effort. I think these ordinary lives of ours are a great learning ground for how the Dharma can be understood. We often seek big moments and big insights and big experiences But really, all the small daily moments contain everything we need to learn from. Beauty and its opposite, whatever you call that. Conflict and cooperation. All the awesomeness of life. All its humanity. You know, what does it really mean for us to fully understand and accept this kind of total interconnectedness as we prepare to re-enter the marketplace? I think a few things happen. First, I think it really softens our hearts. It doesn't make us deluded or forget that there are real differences in people's experiences and lives. But instead of seeing that as a way that we aren't connected, I think that it can encourage us to listen more closely to others' stories, to understand how they came to believe what they believe, how they came to act like they act, how they came to live how they live. While the circumstances of our suffering may be different, by practicing with the first noble truth to really understand and embody the truth of dukkha, the truth of this unsatisfactoriness of life due to all the changes that happen, we can really deepen our empathy with others and their experience of dukkha. So I know that embracing and embodying this truth of connection really isn't easy. There are obstacles in our path to this full understanding of what Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeing. You know, to begin with, our culture and the system of capitalism continue to promote individuality and competition as the best ways of finding success and contentment. And of course, we're buffeted by the eight worldly winds of praise and blame, pleasure and pain, success and failure, fame and ill repute. Our small selves continually seek validation from the outside world. I was recently reminded of a comment quite a number of years ago by Dennis Kucinich. He was the former mayor of Cleveland, Ohio, and quite a number of years ago, he was a presidential candidate. He was asked in an interview by this journalist, he said, so many people see you as a weirdo. What do you think about that? And his answer was, other people's opinions of me are none of my business. So taking that on as a personal motto, I think can really help us find a place of balance in those worldly winds. And there are so many views and opinions, which I've mentioned before about, you know, we have of I'm right and you're wrong and you're not in my camp. And, you know, it just feeds such a sense of self-righteousness and separation. For many years when I used to have my interviews with our founding teacher, Rodney, while he was very supportive of my practice and my political activism, he warned me over and over again about my tendency towards self-righteousness. It was hard to hear, but there was such truth in it. And I wouldn't be surprised if others here couldn't identify with that as well. So earlier I said that, you know, when we see how greed, hatred, and delusion manifest in our own lives, we can have maybe more empathy for how those poisons manifest in others' lives. Even that isn't easy. Yesterday at Clear Mountain during the sit, Ta-Nehisi suggested that we do a bit of meta practice where we could make the individuals we wanted to send metta to, we could make these people really small enough and invite them into our hearts. And I started doing that. I had this whole list of people that I was bringing into my heart, and I was amazed at how large my heart was and that it could accommodate all these people. But then there were some political faces that came up, people that I see in my views and opinions that they're trying to destroy our democracy. And boy, did I have a hard time making room for them. You know, but then this is why this is called a practice, right? I'm not saying that really embodying this truth of interconnectedness and non-separation is easy, but I think it's worth the effort because there are clear benefits to when we do this. In 2020, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said, "In an interconnected world, it is high time to recognize the simple truth that solidarity is self-interest. As we confront huge issues affecting our planet, and even as we bring it back home to just the issues we're confronting in our own communities, coming together is really the only answer." I think one of the greatest benefits of understanding this interconnection is when we take refuge in Sangha, one of the three jewels of Buddhism. And we see Sangha in its largest manifestation, not just the 22 of us who are gathered here this morning. You know, I think we all learned a lot in these last 2 years about isolation and loneliness during the pandemic. Not being able to connect safely with others has taken a toll on all of us. And we found pretty creative ways to get around it, you know, outdoor eating with friends who, for me, who lived on a houseboat with a deck outside. And of course, Zoom, I think, has been a lifesaver. This Sunday morning Sangha, the Tuesday and Thursday morning drop-in sits, where it's pretty much the same dozen or so yogis who show up every Tuesday and Thursday, and we become friends and Dharma buddies. We share what's going on in our lives and in our practices. You know, Sangha is where we find Kalyanamita, those spiritual friends with whom we practice. We are a Kalyanamita group this morning as we practice every Sunday. Sangha is where we receive the gift of feedback, which is offered honestly and kindly when a Dharma buddy notices that we are acting out of ignorance or old habits. Sangha is where we find the support to be brave in taking steps out of our conditioning and acting more kindly and more skillfully in the world. Sangha is where we study and learn about racism and white privilege. Sangha is where we give our time and energy back to Seattle Insight to fulfill its mission of offering the teachings to all who seek them. You know, we take refuge in all three jewels. And the jewel of Sangha reminds us how interconnected we are. You know, whatever Dhamma teaching you go back to, the mustard seed teaching where the Buddha asked this woman who was grieving over the death of her child to go from house to house and find a mustard seed in a house where they had not had a death. She couldn't find any house. It's the same with all of the heavenly messengers. We're all aging. We all have confronted illness. There are members of our Sangha who are experiencing illness. We all have had deaths and losses in our lives. So next month, we're going to be going back. We're re-entering the marketplace next month. And we all do it alone, but we're not really alone because I think we are, in the words of Thich Nhat Hanh, we bring our Sangha with us. We bring that truth of interconnectedness with us. Thank you for your kind attention. So I felt like I kind of went off the topic a little bit because I'm kind of straddling between pictures 9 and 10. And yet it felt to me that we really had some things to think about as we go out. And it's not as if you've never gone out into the world with you integrating your practice in your life. But in our teachings with Sims all next month, we're going to be talking about that. And it just felt like we really needed to remember how interconnected we are and that we're not separated from each other. So I would welcome people to stay for these breakout groups. I know that some folks are shyer, which is totally okay. You don't have to talk in the breakout group. You can just say, I'm here to listen, which is totally fine. We gain so much from hearing Sangha members' views, how you practice with this idea of non-separation, of this verb of inter-are. I think Thich Nhat Hanh is really brilliant in so many ways, and this his coining that phrase, I think, is one of them. So if you can't stay with us, this is a time to say goodbye, and I am going to create some breakout groups once I know how many folks are going to be staying. So the prompt is just to share your own thoughts and practices with this idea of being connected and not separate. Both perhaps some of the challenges of doing that and also some of what's worked for you. And remember that we listen open-heartedly and we don't give advice. We hold what people say in these groups with confidence and with confidentiality. And I'll see you and I'll send a message when you have 4 or 5 minutes left. Okay, looks like we're all back. Yay. So we have some time for anyone who would like to share a reflection or anything that came up in your group, knowing that you really need to respect other people's sharing, so being protective of them, their privacy is important. If you go down to reactions, you can click that and you'll find a little hand that you could raise, and then you have found freedom to unmute. So anyone at all, I hope something was spurred. Even the challenges of knowing that we are interconnected. I love that Maya Angelou poem of we are more alike than unlike. Yes, yeah, Sarah, please. And there you go.
Hi. Well, first of all, thank you for the talk. Very lovely and relatable. And for me in our small breakout group, what felt so incredible is that we each were able to say, here's something real that's happening for me. And we each haven't experienced that in each other's lives, but we could say, oh, okay, I see that and hold that and understand that. And it really did feel like the three of us were connecting and able to see our interconnectedness. And I actually have never come on Sunday before. I usually come on Mondays and Thursdays, but for whatever reason, I was like, I really want to join on Sunday today.
Yay. Thank you. I'm glad you joined us.
So to share my space with Sue and Malia, and I'm like, oh, that's, I suppose, why I needed to join today, to connect with Sue and Malia. So thank you to both of you, and thanks for providing the space, Sue.
Welcome. Yeah. The jewel of Sangha.
Absolutely.
It's pretty amazing. Lily and Nikhil, please.
Yeah. I just wanted to say I really appreciated the poem that you read during the meditation. I thought that, you know, just it brought a lot of context and perspective to something that I think we kind of just like look over on a daily basis. Like I think we're all kind of aware of like, oh, the different components that go into something. But at least for me, I've never kind of brought that thought and perspective to like how deeply some of these things really interconnect. So I appreciate that a lot. And I think, yeah, our group discussion was really interesting. I think a couple of the things that came up, one person mentioned that kind of identifying with some of the difficulty with meta and including people that maybe we don't normally include in our circle and kind of realizing the connectivity there. And that actually also made me think about sometimes how we alienate ourselves and how it can be difficult to practice meta towards ourselves, and how we sometimes isolate ourselves from some of these feelings of kindness and compassion that we might are easier to sometimes feel towards others than to us. And then something else I think interesting that came up was we were discussing kind of the role that communication plays, and sometimes how it can be difficult to figure out how to communicate in these situations when we're trying to converse with people that that have different beliefs or ideologies than we do. And for me, that brought up something that I've been working on recently of trying to be more mindful and aware to why I'm communicating and why I'm saying what I'm trying to say. And something I've realized for me personally is that it oftentimes comes from at the very root of it, I want to feel good about myself. And it can be very buried under a lot of stuff, but that can sometimes be the root and can lead to saying something that isn't perhaps what I actually do want to say, and that's not really what I want my intention to be. So I think that's it. I think that's something that relates to this topic as well as trying to figure out what are you trying to say and what are you trying to communicate and where is it coming from, especially in these situations.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. That's such a powerful part of the practice and the Eightfold Path of wise speech. Asking ourselves, why do I want to say what I'm going to say? And it could slow down speech quite a bit, because once you start asking that question, like you said, there's a lot of things that something might come up as the first answer, but then there's maybe four or five other answers. And it's humbling when we realize all of the different intentions that are there in our desire to talk. Yeah. Thanks, Nikhil. Yeah, I think we're confronted so often with the separations. And I had an experience yesterday walking on, I noticed that there were a whole bunch of volunteers cleaning up the overgrown brush and shrubs. I live along the lake and canal. And so after I had gotten home, I went for a walk to say thank you. So I found out who they were and I thanked them. And as I continued to walk, there must have been like 15 or 20, and I kept on saying thank you. And then at the last, this guy was taking all of the debris that they had cut and just throwing it onto other parts of like the blackberries and other stuff. And I said, I shared that in the past when we do a cleanup, we're able to get some bags from the city. And he got so mad at me. You're coming here, we're volunteering, and you want to tell us how to do it better. And I thought, whoa. I apologized because it wasn't my intention, but it was how it landed. So, boy, separation from our speech is just a huge piece. What started out as gratitude ended up in this fight with this young guy. And I went, oh, Lord, how did I get there? Sometimes you ask yourself, how did I get here? Just how did I get here? And, and there were, of course, two different beings interacting. But was I really saying you should do it my way? And there was probably some element of that. My way or the highway kind of thing. We all know that position, don't we? I'm seeing a smile and a nod from Sean. those of us who've had long-term friendships or been in relationship, like a primary relationship for a lot of years. I mean, boy, do we know that? I know better what you should do. I have a sweet, very dear friend who I just had to confess that to not too long ago. Yeah. And I think I'm excited about next month. And it says entering the marketplace with extended hands. And the person is this scruffy looking guy, you know, has no shirt on. There are all these different pictures, and some of them have him carrying a gourd, which sometimes in those times were filled with wine. So he's going and hanging out with everybody and sharing what he knows and who he is, and you know, and maybe also offering some inspiration to those we come in contact with. Because I know that I get inspired from our Sangha all the time, you know, as people share. And I think it's, without getting too lofty or too swollen in the head, I think when you have a practice, you do have something to share, something pretty amazing. I remember in a talk from Pema Chodron, you know how she used to give these, maybe she still does, these huge talks to like 1,000 people and stuff. And somebody asked her this question. They said, well, you know, what you describe in terms of meditation, it sounds like I'm just going to turn into this really boring person. You know, everything's fine. Nothing, you know, like affects me. And it's just, you know, do I really want to become this kind of dull person? And she said, in her answer, she said, well, maybe that might happen, but wouldn't it be great to have a friend like that? A friend who is calm and at ease and can listen and receive whatever your drama is and not get all thrown off by that. Wouldn't that just be beautiful? And I thought, if we sometimes think, you know, well, where am I going with this? Then look at your Dharma friends and what they provide for you, and that it really is a jewel. So, anything else before I share some announcements? And I think we're good. I don't see any hands or people unmuting. Okay. Thank you all for being here. Hope to see you again soon. And, yeah, take care and have a lovely day.